You know, you go to that tournament, go play your best. You go have fun and play hard. And if you play poorly, you go home and do the same things over again. And if you play great and win, you go home and do the same things over again.
This is The Tournament Code.
We appreciate you joining us, Coach. Something we're doing this year is we kind of have an icebreaker to start to make it more conversational, et cetera. And so Putview Books sponsors us. So we call it the Putview Books opening tee shot. And for you, since we're talking college golf and golf in general, I figured you probably know the answers to these, but it would be good to pull on past NCAA champion. Obviously, 2023 team champ, you know who that is. But if we drop it back a decade to 2013, do you remember who the team champ was that year and the individual champ was that year?
Oh, 2013, that was my third year coaching. Man, I have no clue.
Okay. That was Alabama as the team was the team and Max Homa was the player. And then we'll drop it. We'll make a see if we got any easier one. We'll have a breakfast ball here. How about the 2019 team and individual?
2019. What course was it at?
I don't have that answer. I'll give you the individual team. The individual played for Oklahoma State.
Wow, you guys are stumping me here already. Was it Hovland? That's right around his time.
Probably the one at Carson Creek, right?
That it was Matthew Wolf was the individual.
Got it. And I know Oklahoma State won that.
That was the year before Oklahoma State won. Brock Everett won the individual. It was Stanford that year. Sorry to stump you so bad. Normally, I give multiple choice questions. It's just a hard one to do multiple choice on.
No, I probably need to brush up on my college golf history. I've gotten so engulfed in the SEC here and focusing on what's going on here and trying to stay in the present. But that's terrible. I got to get better.
It's probably for the better.
Yeah, I got to get better.
If you win enough championships, you're never going to have to remember who won it a decade ago because you just got to remember yourself every single year.
No, we got a long way to go. So, I'll probably take some heat for that.
It's all good. Tell us a little bit about what's going on at Florida right now. So right now you're the head coach at Florida. Tell us, you talked about SEC championships coming up when we were off air. Tell us a little bit about what's coming up, what you have going on right now, and then we'll kind of dive into your history, et cetera.
Yeah, so just finished the regular season about a week and a half ago. And so we got the postseason upon us here. And, you know, it was a big year for our program because we lost three All-Americans last year that have been pivotal in kind of the rise of the University of Florida back into college golf competitiveness. And, you know, we obviously miss Ricky Castillo and Fred Biondi and Yushin Lin a lot, but it's been amazing because we've had a young group of guys who really didn't have a ton of experience coming into this year step up. So we ended up winning six times this year in the regular season, which hasn't been done very often at Florida. So really proud of that and proud of our guys and the work they've put in. But, you know, this is what we play for. This is what the early mornings and the late nights are all about. It's for the SEC championship, for regionals, and to have a chance of winning a national championship.
Absolutely. What's it like having, you know, a new team come in and being as essentially really extremely competitive as you are? Because it's not easy to do what you guys have done.
No, I think I've learned a lot as a coach because, you know, the last 2 years prior to this where you don't reap the rewards from the work, they're paying off right now. And these guys that weren't playing, they were at home watching some other guys do it. They were still putting in the work and developing their games. And that's what I think. I had a really rough summer. I was super anxious about this team just because I didn't know what to expect. And looking back, you know, if we can continue going forward to making sure that the guys that aren't necessarily in the lineup right now or kind of on the edge of the lineup are still doing the right things at home constantly, that gives you a chance for them to be ready when it is their turn. And the guys this year, the Parker Bells and the Luke Poulters and, you know, Jack Turner's a freshman. But these guys have just been so huge for our lineup. And, really, really proud of what we've accomplished and excited to see you know, if we can take it to another level in the postseason.
What kind of process do you run for your players as far as practice, qualifiers, and in general, inter-team events? Because from what our understanding is, a lot of coaches, even at high levels, run things a little differently. Some are a little more hands-on. Some are a little more, you guys are good enough, go out and play. I'm going to provide you whatever support you need. Go do it. What is your philosophy as to coaching your team? And obviously, whatever your philosophy is, it's at least reaping some success right now, and you're seeing some of the rewards.
Yeah, we are very hands-on. We're definitely on the high end of that scale. Coach Hart and I, Dudley Hart, our assistant, you know, we're super close with our guys. We're at the golf course. You know, Dudley's usually there at like 6:30 or 7. He's a super early morning guy. I got some chores at home. I got to take the kids to school. And then, you know, I'm there usually at 8 or just after 8. And then, you know, we're there until the guys pretty much tell us we can leave. So it's a lot of time with the guys. We take their development incredibly seriously. You know, if a parent's asking me, I have 3 kids. So parents are asking us to take care of their son and develop their obviously great talents if they're getting to an SEC school like this. We take that job seriously. So it's a lot of hands-on. Most of the guys have the foundations of great golf games. They, you know, most of them have great swings and some decent power and, you know, the basis of what you need to be a good player. We're just kind of adding the polish. And usually a lot of that comes with short game, with wedges, chipping. And, you know, the biggest part is their time management, you know, where they're spending it with their golf game, making sure that they get their schoolwork done so they don't add that extra stress. You got to learn how to take care of your body, how to eat right, and then managing your game on the golf course and just making the right decisions, really teaching them emotional control and patience and course management and the times to press and the times to not. And it's such a fine art. And a lot of high school players come to us that are very talented golfers, but they don't know all this stuff. And I think Duds and I have been doing a pretty good job of helping our guys get to the next level, and we've seen some success from it. So it's been fun.
With the emergence of PGA Tour U and all the opportunities that come with that, how do you guys as coaches manage team goals and individual goals for your players?
It's a great question. And I think I know this is going to sound so cliche, but all of it goes back to the process. And if you're doing the right things every day, waking up early, taking care of your body, practicing, working on the right things, playing and growing and constantly trying to learn, both of those individual and team goals will be met. And we had 3 players in the top 10, I want to say, maybe top 15 of PGA Tour U last year, in Fred, Ricky, and Yushin. And it was never once an issue with the 3 of them. You know, obviously they're trying to compete hard and get status when they get to the next level. But at the same time, all 3 of them were wanting the best for each other and for the team and trying to take us to the highest level. So in the end of the day, if you play great golf, it solves everything for you individually and for the team. So it's pretty easy puzzle to figure out.
100%. And what do you think as a coach goes into creating that culture where, you know, all your players are rooting for each other?
Well, I come from a hockey background. I grew up in Toronto, Canada, and I played hockey was my main sport growing up. And that's just part of the deal with hockey is you're going to fight for your teammates and stick up for your teammates and be there for them. And you have to depend on them. You know, you're passing the puck to them and they're passing it back to you. And, you know, you've got some structure on the ice and you need to rely on other guys doing their job. And I think that's kind of how we go about it here. We're trying to get everyone to do their job, and we try and lay it out pretty clearly of what their job is. And, you know, I look at someone last year like Matthew Kress, who was a redshirt freshman for us, and he was maybe the best I've ever had at doing his job. He gets up every day, works out incredibly hard, takes care of his body, eats right, listens to podcasts and reads books and is always trying to take himself as a man and his golf game to the next level. And I think the guys at the top end of our roster really respected that. And Matthew cracked the lineup towards the end of the year. And, you know, his character and toughness and emotional control really, really helped us in the postseason. He was a stalwart for us and in that five spot. And that says a lot about him. So, you know, I think when everyone's pulling their own weight and working hard and having an optimistic attitude and enthusiastic attitude, you can have a great atmosphere. And when you have a great atmosphere, everyone has a good time. And when everyone has a good time, you usually have a lot of success with talent. So I know that's a long drawn out answer. I don't think there's one easy way to create culture. I've been here at the University of Florida. This is my 10th year now, and it's taken a long time for us to get it to this point. So it's certainly not easy and takes a lot of time and effort, but it's fun. It's fun watching it grow. And I look back to my start of my career and how little I knew, and you know how I look back and I thought a lot of the wrong things were important and probably hurt some of our teams at different times. But that's the beauty of life is you get to make mistakes and hopefully get another opportunity to make it right. And you know, last year it all came together for us and we made it right.
That is cool. I think one of the tough parts about golf compared to other sports, like you mentioned hockey, you stick up for your teammates, you have to rely on each other. Golf being such an individual sport, you're not as connected always with your teammates, not always thinking about how they're relying on you and you're relying on them, even though that is the case. And also it can be difficult as far as being teammates with people because you don't have that necessarily same interaction with them that you have in a sport. And a lot of guys, golf attracts guys who maybe that's not their thing, or they just don't have that experience. I played a lot of other sports before I picked up golf. I didn't say it earlier, but I didn't start playing competitive golf till my sophomore year of high school. So I was playing pretty much every other sport there was and just picked it up and started trying to be competitive with reasonable success at that. But having the background, at least for me, in playing what I would call in playing contact sports, team sports, et cetera, was at least extremely helpful to me to help put things in perspective and help understand what it took to put in the work, especially when it comes to putting in work in golf. It can be hard. What does it look like for you when there's a disconnect, when you have a player, and not anyone in particular, but like when you have a player who doesn't connect with the concept or connect with the team mentality, et cetera? What does it look like? Like, how does it manifest itself? And how do you try to get them connected with that and help relay that to them so they understand the gravity of the situation?
Well, your question brings two stories to mind, you know, about teammates mattering and affecting each other. Conrad Ray, who the great golf coach at Stanford, I always remember I heard him say that momentum is real in college golf. And when I heard him say that, I was like, dang, he's right. Like I could remember so many times in my career where the team, you know, you have a finishing stretch where the team goes 10 under and they all play well at the same time. Or we had one regional, we had second ranked team in the country and we all imploded at the same time on the back nine. And when he said that, I remember that summer, I wrote down every instance I could remember of where we got hot at the same time and cooled off at the same time. And I really realized, I don't know if this is true or right or not, but I realized that our guys and the coaches are affecting each other. Somehow, some way, that's happening out there. And so we coach that really hard. If you have bad body language, if you're bringing negative energy to our team, the guy in front of you and the guy behind you are going to see you do that. And we're not going to put up with it. And, you know, we've had some guys in the past that have missed some tournaments and missed some time because they can't understand that fact. And that's just human nature. If you see your, and it can be like bad moments can be the catalyst to launching you forward. Because if you see a teammate like Matthew Kress is the best at this, really struggling on a hole, and let's say he makes a double bogey and his shoulders are back and his chin's up and it doesn't look like it rattles him at all, like that'll give you confidence. Like, wow, he was struggling there and that's not bothering him at all. And on the contrary, you know, if you've got someone up there and he three putts and makes a bogey, that's not even that big of a deal. And he's throwing his arms up in the air and throwing his golf ball in the water. And, you know, his body language is terrible. That takes away from the goal and shows weakness and shows your teammate that, you know, maybe you're focused on some things that you shouldn't. So that was huge when Conrad said that. And then to the other part of your question about having one person that maybe doesn't fit in, I was on a car ride from the Raleigh-Durham airport to a camp in Pinehurst with Coach Dan Brooks, who's obviously had a ton of success with the Duke women's program. I don't know as you guys know from earlier, I have no clue how many championships he's won, but I know he's won a few. And I was asking him about his different teams that had won. And he said, I've had some teams that are as close as you could imagine and love each other that have won. And I've had some teams that didn't get along very well and they won as well. So he kind of stressed that that didn't really matter. I think it helps and it's maybe more enjoyable for everyone when the whole squad gets along and sees eye to eye. And that's up to Dudley and I to create an atmosphere, at least where there's a lot of respect. And the guys, I think that's the big thing about working hard and doing your job, is that everyone else sees, okay, maybe he's not my favorite person in the world, or maybe I don't hang out with him all the time, but man, he's doing his job and I respect that. And respect is probably a little bit more powerful than being likable. And so if everyone on our team can respect each other and respect the job that they're doing, I think your culture is going to be in a pretty good place.
Agreed. When it comes, you talked about players putting in work in workouts, and when it comes to resources that you guys have, I mean, Florida's a top-notch school in a lot of sports, but and also as far as essentially every sport, Florida's a top-notch school. When it comes to the resources you have around strength, conditioning, et cetera, it seems like you probably have a lot. I don't know much about it. Tell us a little bit about what the resources are like, what the programming is like, because things have changed since I was in college. When I was in college, it was 10 years ago, it was happening. So we're just starting to get TPIs come around, but we're not doing that much TPI. It was still, golfers were either doing one of two things. One, they're doing a ton of Olympic lifts at some programs, or two, they're doing, I don't know what the right way to call these workouts, but they were what I call pseudo TPI workouts, where you really weren't really putting any force on, or you weren't loading any muscles or anything of that nature. It was really more mobility, et cetera. And so like when I was in college, I would go in and do the morning workout. Then I would come back for a second one. So I was doing 2 days just to be able to like do something. Cause if I didn't lift it wasn't good for my frame. If I wasn't putting some weight on. So tell me about what the mentality and the philosophy is as far as behind your strength and conditioning.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably been the greatest thing for me coming to the University of Florida, is the staff I get to work with. Our academic staff, Garen Rowland, runs it. He's just unbelievable. And I don't ever have to worry about the academic side. He takes care of all that. And the guys have their own relationship with him. That's huge. Takes a lot of stress away from our program. And then, on the strength and conditioning side, I've worked with some great coaches since I've been here. It started with Preston Green, who is a longtime strength and conditioning coach for our basketball program, and Billy Donovan. And Preston would hire these interns every year, and they were just the most amazing, enthusiastic, hardworking coaches. And so we've changed a lot and come a long way. But the last 3 years, we've worked with the big Swede, Marcus First, and Marcus has taken our entire strength and conditioning program to a whole new level. And he's gotten TPI certified and learned so much about the game. It's amazing how far he's come. I don't think he knew very much. He was a swimmer in college. And so he didn't know much about golf, but he's learned a ton. He's really invested his time and energy into getting better and making sure that he's having a positive impact on our guys. He comes to our tournaments. He watches our qualifying, you know, to see, okay, they need this, they need that. And so it's a huge, huge part of our program. And I think, you know, this maybe weeds out some kids that think maybe they want to go to the University of Florida. We work out as a team usually three times a week, in the morning at 6:15 a.m. And we have some guys on our team, and I'm not exaggerating, they work out 7 days a week, and it's endless for them. And, you know, Marcus is obviously, you look at the game and who the best players in the world are. I think it's undeniable that speed is a big part of that. So he's constantly training speed, power, quickness, all those things. He's learned a lot about what translates from the gym into hitting the golf ball further. And, you know, I look, he's going to kill me when I say this, but because I was just working with him yesterday. Tyler Wilkes is a senior on our team from Tampa, Florida. He's been a great player, really helped us a ton throughout his career. And he came in kind of mid-160s ball speed. He's big. Tyler's probably 6'2", 6'3", plenty of weight on his frame, but he just didn't have the strength and the power. And it took him a while. He fought us on it for sure, but he's really bought into the gym. And Marcus has done a great job kind of earning his respect and trust. And, Tyler can hit 175 ball speed now. And, swinging it close to, 116, 117, 118. And that's huge for him. And he's got an amazing short game, and that carried him in junior golf. And he was able to beat a lot of people in the state of Florida. But you go to the next level, the higher level of college golf and obviously pro golf, you've got to be able to get the ball out there at least 290 yards. And if you don't, you need to be Jim Furyk, where you don't ever freaking miss your target. You know, you're so accurate. So, and there's not very many Jim Furyks in the world. So, yeah, we put a ton of time and energy into it. And to watch the speed changes and body changes from freshman year to senior year is a very, very rewarding part of my job. I can think of so many stories. Quentin DeBove comes to mind. He's a senior this year that's going to be moving on. And how far he hits the golf ball now is just unbelievable compared to where he was as a freshman. So it's definitely setting them up for success.
Since you started at Florida 10 years ago, a lot of things in the game have changed. Just kind of like how we're talking about, speed has become a big focus. Also, there's been this big push with analytics. How have you used analytics to improve how you lead this team?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I was lucky because analytics got really big in hockey. I know I mentioned this a couple times, but I'm the biggest Toronto Maple Leaf fan in the world and constantly following the NHL. And there's some advanced stats in hockey, Corsi and Fenwick and these different metrics that they've been following in hockey a long time. And I got really, really curious about that, just about on the hockey side of, okay, general managers and coaches are starting to use these numbers about, shot attempts and puck possession and different things like that in hockey. And I'm like, how can that translate to golf? And haven't really figured out a science of it yet, but obviously I try and read Every Shot Counts by Mark Brody once a year. He's obviously the guru in golf about, it's amazing. Our guys still don't grasp this sometimes, but if how many shots, let's say it's an 8-footer, okay, that's 50-50 on the PGA Tour approximately, right? So if you start understanding this stuff or when it goes under, when it goes under par, I think it's 160 yards in the fairway. Outside of 160 yards, the best players in the world start to take more than 3 shots to get the ball in the hole. And just for our guys to understand those situational things where if you have a 5-iron from 215 yards and you get it down in 3, you're beating the best players in the world. You don't have to stuff that 5-iron. And then, laying up on par 5s and just strokes gained is just huge. And you have to have an understanding of that. I use it constantly when I'm in my own brain, when I'm out there with my guys thinking through their strategy and what they need to do. And, Dudley's so great because he's got all that PGA Tour experience. He was out there for 25 or 30 years watching the best players in the world. So it's second nature to him, but I've had to learn a lot of this and understand what the best players in the world are doing. And yeah, so I think analytics and understanding how to put up a score and when to take risk and when not to is enormous in the game.
Yeah, it's amazing. Once you get into analytics and also just probabilistic thinking, as far on the golf course and understanding that we have control of, so we have some control, but really not that much control. We're trying to make the same swing every time, but if we're hitting driver, our dispersion is going to be somewhere in a 60 to 70 yard range, depending on who you are, depending on skill level, et cetera. And understanding that on the golf course can make a big difference for guys, where, especially when you're picking tee shot targets, it's amazing to me still a lot of people that I talk to that are playing competitive golf haven't fully picked up on that, and they're hitting shots that again, they're way better than me, so more power to them. But I know their dispersion isn't 40 yards wide necessarily. And so when they're hitting driver into certain spots where there's OB on either side, I watch them like, man, it's tough to make that decision over and over and not have that bite you frequently. How are you working with players strategy wise going into a tournament? I think I'm trying to pull if correctly. I think when we had talked with Jesse Mudd, he talked even back when he was playing there, that there was a lot of work that went into tournament preparation. Tell us kind of what tournament prep looks like for you as far as charting out courses, anything with the players.
Yeah, this is probably where we drive our guys nuts the most, especially that the practice round and the meeting the night before the tournament, because Dudley and I understand exactly how important that is. It's definitely the most important day of any tournament. That you got to learn a ton about the golf course and the practice round. We usually only get one. A lot of our guys, like this week, we'll have three guys in our lineup that are seeing this course for the first time. So that day, next Tuesday, is so huge for us. And the meeting the night before, where we're developing our game plan and putting a strategy together, I mean, a lot of the tournament's going to be won or lost that night. And Scott Fawcett with Decade is... Scott's a great friend of mine. We're constantly talking about stuff and running things back and forth off each other. And he helped me a lot understand strokes gained and strategy. And, you know, it's tricky because, you know, Scott will probably disagree with me, but I think every player is different. You know, we had Fred Biondi last year who won the individual national championship. And I had a rule with Fred, with driver, that there was no rule. If Fred wanted to hit driver, he's hitting driver. And he just was an unbelievable driver of the golf ball. And I would not recommend that to everyone. You know, he was still smart about it and wouldn't do it and would hit three wood or drop back to hybrid a lot. But, you know, he had the green light with that. Maybe some other guys, you know, they probably don't have the green light. And I think, you know, going back to our conversation about being a great teammate, is that stuff's huge. Is not making three bogeys in a row and then making an emotional decision and hitting driver in a spot where you shouldn't hit driver. That kills your team. And those are some of the things that I will not put up with. If we got a plan to do it one way and then you make an emotional decision because things aren't going your way and things get worse, that drives me nuts. And we've had some players this year piss away some tournaments just sheerly off decision making. And as a player, that should drive you nuts, because you work so hard to get your game ready, to get your short game ready, to get your putting ready, and then you're gonna ruin your chance to win a golf tournament or for your team to win a golf tournament because you're making a bad decision that's so controllable. That's the stuff that drives us nuts, and hopefully we're instilling in our players that should drive them nuts as well. So the preparation is key. It's different for everyone. And that's the art of coaching. You gotta really understand what your guys are good at, what they're great at, how you can best use their talents to shoot a score. And hopefully you're teaching your guys that throughout their 4-year career. But it is a big puzzle. It never ends. And that's the fun part of golf, is you're constantly working on little things to become the best player you can possibly be.
Yeah, so when you guys have that meeting next week, the night before the first round of the SEC Championship, how much of the strategy is going to be like, you know, we're going to do this as a unit, we're all going to approach this hole or, you know, this shot this way, and how much of it is, you know, you're going to do this and you're going to do this for individual players?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think there's some points on the golf course where we, you know, and we always ask for our players' input. That I think you have to have that. Dudley and I certainly aren't dictating the way that they're going to play golf. I don't, you know, both of us know that's a recipe for disaster. They've got to make it about their game and what they're comfortable. They're the ones pulling the trigger. And I think that's the biggest thing for us is what kind of plan can we put together where these guys can commit to each shot 100%. And even if it's hitting a 2-iron on a hole where they really want to hit driver, you know, are they going to be fully committed to that 2-iron? And so we're just trying to put together a plan that we can fully commit to. But yeah, absolutely. I think there's usually it comes a lot more with pin placements. Okay, we know the pin's going to be here one day. We are not firing at that. You know, we've especially Sea Island's so beautiful in the SEC Championship because we've been there. This will be my 10th year going there. So I've seen where tournaments are won and lost. I've seen where teams don't make the match play or make the match play or have success or don't have success with different strategies. So it next week's huge because we have such a huge database of experience and we can guide our guys in a positive route. And that came from making a lot of mistakes. You know, I saw number four at Sea Island is historically wind dependent, but when it's into the wind, it's a really, really difficult tee shot. And you guys were talking about driver and fitting it into a tight window. We had one of our players try and fit driver into a super tight window there and ended up making a 7. And, you know, in the end of the day, it was probably one of the decisions that cost us making match play that year. And we were way too good of a team not to make the match play. So you learn that stuff and that's where you need the team buy-in and you need the trust. You know, and Dudley and I work really hard all year to earn our players' trust so that we can say, guys, when it's these conditions, you've got to hit this club into this window, you know, a 240 or 260 yard shot, whatever the window is that we figured out, you got to trust us that this is the right play and that over time, over 3 rounds, over the match play, you know, it's going to work out. And I think that was a big part of our success in us winning the SEC Championship last year was I think we had an elite plan that our guys really stubbornly stuck to and we were able to beat Vanderbilt in the final there, and they've just had such an unbelievable team and program, and we had to be almost perfect that day to beat them, and we were.
You mentioned earlier that there are things now that you things now when you look back that you're like, oh, I thought this mattered, and it didn't really matter that much. What were some of those things that when you look back on in your early coaching career, now that you're a decade in at Florida? What are some of those things you thought, oh, I thought that was important. I spent effort and energy on that and it didn't matter. Maybe it was even a negative to spend time on it or your team didn't need to be doing it.
Yeah, I think I probably maybe early in my career was a little too hockey coach, rah-rah. I've really realized with golf is you've got to be incredible at controlling your emotions. And When I really, you know, I think sometimes you forget. That's why I still try and play competitive and at least play in the state open every year, because you get in a tournament setting, you remember how hard golf is and how it makes you feel. And sometimes, you know, I'm like getting upset at our guys about, you know, silly, stupid things. And obviously they're not trying to screw up. So I had to take myself out of it and take the emotions out of it and coach them and help them understand. You guys were mentioning this earlier about, you know, you guys are doing this podcast because hopefully you're helping people not make the same mistakes you guys did. Well, that's exactly what coaching is. I'm a coach. I wanted to play on the PGA Tour one day. I went to UNLV with hopes and dreams of playing on the tour, and I got really close. I only ended up playing in one PGA Tour event in my career. So I got there, but I didn't get there to the ultimate level where I held a card. And so all those reasons that I've understood why I probably didn't make it, we're trying to pass those on to our guys. So, you know, it's constant. There's so many of them. I'm not sure I can just pinpoint one now, but I look back early in my career and I was way too emotional. I forgot how much our guys wanted it and that I didn't need to create it inside of them, the motivation and the want to be great. They have that. I need to teach them the intricacies of the game that's what my job is. And Dudley's really, really helped me with that too, because he's just really put an emphasis on preparation. And if we're prepared properly and we've put in the time and we put in the effort and we've sacrificed some things and social life and stuff like that, and when we're really focused on the goal, you know, you go to that tournament, go play your best. You go have fun and play hard. And if you play poorly, you go home and do the same things over again. And if you play great and win, you go home and do the same things over again. And you keep constantly adjusting that process till it gets close to as perfect as you can. And, you know, you go compete again. So it's, I think, you know, it's obviously I'm being cliche all over the place here, but the process, and I've learned a lot from Nick Saban and some great coaches in some other sports. You know, Gino Auriemma, the great women's basketball coach at UConn. There's a video that he talks about body language. I mean, that was a game changer for me in our program when I saw that. And I just realized, man, I'm not coaching that hard enough. And so to have bad body language is absolutely unacceptable on the Florida Gators now. And our guys know it, and it's made us a better team.
Yeah, you mentioned you were a pretty good player yourself and wanted to kind of get into that. You can still play, say, oh, I play in an open. I'm pretty sure you've beat some of your own players in some of these tournaments. Tell us about what your golf game looks like now and kind of how, essentially how you got to Florida, your background as far as playing over at UNLV, playing on some of the mini tours, et cetera.
Yeah, so I was lucky, got an early start in the game. I had a big brother who's 4 years older than me, Jeff, and he loved all sports, and I loved playing all sports with him. So ever since I was probably 4 or 5 years old, playing hockey against him, street hockey and barn hockey and all this stuff that we do at home. And luckily, him and my dad picked up golf, I think when he was 9 or 10, so I was 5 or 6, and I was out there. I fell in love with it. I made a birdie on the 15th hole, par 3 course close to our house. Made a birdie, probably maybe my second or third time ever playing golf. And I'll never forget, I was on the 15th hole and I dribbled a little 5 wood down there to like 2 feet. And my brother, being the competitive a-hole that he is, he made me putt it. I had to putt it. But anyway, somehow I shook it in from 2 feet and made a birdie. And that got me hooked to the game. So when it was sunny and warm out, I was playing golf from that point on and really loved it. And I was probably 15 or 16 and had gotten to a pretty high level in hockey. And my dad was great. I'm so thankful for him. He said, man, I think it's time to pick one. And I know you love both sports and we're spending so much time at each. But if you're going to be really great at one of them, you got to pick one. And I love to practice golf. That was my thing. I love the games in hockey and I love the team, but I didn't like the practices. And so I figured, all right, I'm going to pick something that I like to practice. I could be at the golf course from 7 a.m. to dark every day, and I find something to do. So pick golf, and went to high school my last 2 years down in Florida. Was lucky enough to meet Coach Dwayne Knight, who's my second dad and changed my life forever. I got to play for him for 4 years at UNLV. Ryan Moore, who's had a wonderful PGA Tour career. He's been out there since we left college. He was my roommate there for freshman year. And then my last 3 years, I roomed with Troy Denton, who's now Will Zalatoris and coaches the Cootie brothers. And, you know, he's had a lot of success swing coaching out on the PGA Tour. He's still out there pretty much every week. So I was surrounded by two guys who absolutely loved golf. Andre Gonzalez, another one who is on our team at the same time. He ended up playing out on the PGA Tour for a lot, and he had a long way to go. So he was an incredibly hard worker, and just it was kind of a bunch of misfits, I'd call us, but we had a really, really neat team who loved golf and got along really well. And we had a lot of success there too. So I continued playing, played on PGA Tour Canada for 3 years and had some good moments out there. But I was lucky in 2011, February, I had just missed Q school in November at second stage. I missed by one shot to make it to final stage. And I think that was a sign looking back now. But Coach Knight called me in February and said, hey, my assistant coach, Darren Dorsey, just left. And would you come and take his position for the rest of the year and see if you like it? And to have a consistent salary at that point, I was broke, maybe $10,000 in debt. That sounded pretty good. And he said, look, you can come and play with the guy. You get your work done, you can play with the guys as much as you want. So that was awesome for me. That was, that team was Kurt Kitayama and Carl Johnson and Kevin Penner, Nico Maruri. These were just the most great young men. Kurt, I still have a relationship with today. I was his swing coach for a long time there. And, you know, I was just playing with those guys 5-6 days a week, doing my work in the morning and then playing with them when they got out of school. So I just fell in love with coaching really fast. And then 3.5 years after I got started at UNLV, the Buddy Alexander, the legendary coach here in Florida, retired. And I was so lucky to get this job. I still don't know why Jeremy Foley hired me. I tell him that all the time, but he saw something in me that maybe I didn't even see in myself. And he gave me the greatest opportunity anyone's ever given me. He put this historic program in my hands, and I took that responsibility very, very seriously. And it changed me as a man. You know, his belief in me and his trust in me, you know, I wasn't going to let him down. So I grew up a lot. I think I was 30 when I got the job, or 31. And, you know, it's been an amazing 10-year run, and I'm very, very proud to be a Florida Gator, and proud that we've been able to contribute to the great history of this program. And I'm looking forward to adding some more here in the next, you know, 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, clearly you've done an incredible job at University of Florida, winning the national championship last year. And I kind of want to, you know, go more into that and just talk about, you know, when did you realize, you know, this team could win a national championship?
I don't know. I don't think that moment ever came. We obviously had a ton of talent, but we had our issues that we had to work out, and they were different for every player. We didn't even have our lineup set last year until the last regular season tournament of the year. And the golf gods were so gracious that they sent us a sign that screamed out that Matthew Kress was the five guy. John Dubois and those other three that I mentioned earlier had solidified their spot. But we were coming down the stretch in Augusta against Illinois and Mike Small's great program. And we always seem to play with them a lot, which is great because Mike runs such an unbelievable program. As players do it the right way and play hard. And, you know, if you beat Illinois and Mike's teams, you've done something right. And they're always a great measuring stick. But we were tied with them probably with 6 or 7 holes to go. And Matthew Kress birdied 4 of his last 6 for us to kind of win the tournament running away. And it was like, all right, he's the guy. Like, there's the moment where all the pressure, everything was on the line, and he stepped up. And I think his teammates got a lot of belief in him through that. So we got our lineup there. And then I think the hard thing for us was Ricky and Fred and Yushin. This was their senior year. And they only had 2 chances left to get a ring. So you get a ring at the University of Florida for winning the SEC championship or winning a national championship. And they were 0-6 in their first 3 years. And that was daunting. It was really scary to have a team that was that good and that talented, and they were possibly going to leave our program with nothing to show for it. And so they kind of clicked as a unit. They started doing things differently. Our sacrifice and work ethic went to another level. And these guys, they really were on a mission to do something. And we had lost to Vanderbilt in the final of the SEC championship a year before, and we played really great. We took all of us to beat Ole Miss in the quarterfinal. I remember that. And then we played really well against Texas A&M and beat them in the semis. And we had that matchup again Sunday morning at Sea Island against Vanderbilt in the final. And we didn't want it any other way. If we were going to win this tournament, it had to go through Scott Limbaugh and his great lineup of players at Vandy. And they played great. And we just happened to be literally 1 shot better. John Dubois made a 12-footer on number 18 at Sea Island that I'll never forget in my life. The whole tournament was there watching. There was a what felt like 1,000 people around that green watching this, and he poured that thing right in the middle and was ultimately the difference for us to win. And so I don't think my mind ever got there about this could – you know, you have the potential when you have the great players. You just don't know with golf. Everything has to come together in that week. And that's really, really hard to do. And it's a credit to our guys of the time and effort that they invested. And it just was our time. And I think after we won that SEC championship and they had earned that ring, the heat was off. And that made us really, really dangerous out in Arizona at Greyhawk, because they were kind of playing with house money. You know, we had already got that ring and won that big event and had that breakthrough. And man, we played so loose and so great at Greyhawk all week long. And I knew we were going to be really tough to beat. And Florida State threw it all at us in the semifinals. They had us dead to rights. We were down and out, down 2-0. And Ricky was down 2 with 3 holes to go. And somehow we wiggled out of it. And he made a 20-25 footer on the third playoff hole to send us to the final. And just a dream come true, and a 2-month stretch of my life that I will never forget.
Coming close to our final questions here, Coach, I had wanted to shift it to something a little less tournament focused, but more about the state of college golf in general and kind of what you're doing on the recruiting side. And it'll be a little bit longer, but I'll promise to get to a point. I was recently talking with a D3 coach who has a player that's really solid, and is transfer to play at a D1 school next year. And he told me that this school's offering NIL money, and he told me the amount. And I was like, man, not that it wasn't six figures or anything like that, but it was, I mean, any money when you're in college is decent money. But he was talking dollars out there. He was, and to me, that was pretty interesting to hear, because, I mean, with football, you have your revenue generating, your major revenue generating sport, your profitable sport. And then pretty much every sport, as I understand it, besides football, basketball, University of Kentucky is profit generating for the most part. But all the other sports, it's harder to be profitable. And so I didn't know like what sort of allocations they have as far as being able to help players out, being able to recruit players. So when it comes to, for you guys, one, just tell us what the landscape looks like for NIL and golf. Because to me, it's interesting, the idea of NIL money in golf, given how, I mean, no offense, golfers are just, we're not that popular. We're not very good looking. We're not any of that kind of, we're not charismatic. We don't get on TV a lot. So it's not something that necessarily maybe lends itself to that same way that, and they're not as well locally well known as maybe like basketball players or football players, where you have your star quarterback, Graham Mertz. I don't know what kind of deals he has, but I'm sure Graham Mertz has endorsement deals. I'm sure.
I think Graham's doing very well.
DJ Lagway has some deals. And so when it comes to recruiting,
Daniel's a Florida football fan.
Long time. Used to watch Rex Grossman at that. I mean, that doesn't date me too much because I'm not that old, but used to love watching Rex Grossman. So when it comes to dealing with recruitment, all that kind of stuff, what does that look like? And two, how are you getting in the players that you want to get? Because frankly, like basketball, at least from my perspective, basketball, some of the guys can focus on the money and that's fine. But golf, like, the money is not the end all be all, because at the end of the day, you got to make it out on tour. How are you making sure that you got guys that are focused on the right things?
Ooh, timely question. I mean, I've really struggled with this. I'll be totally honest with you, because it certainly is not what I signed up for when I got into coaching and got into college coaching. But, you know, I've come around on it. Because two things. I think number one, when you look at it from the school's perspective, the University of Florida golf program's got a wonderful history and tradition. You know, you're talking, I'm gonna leave out some names here, but Steve Melnick, Gary Koch, Chairman Fred Ridley, Billy Horschel, Tyson Alexander out there on the PGA Tour now, you know, Mark Kelkovecchia. It's Andy North. It goes on and on and on. Andy Bean. I'm going to come up with so many names here. Chris DeMarco. So many great players that have formed this tradition, and it means everything to them. And they're still heavily involved. I hear from them all the time, good and bad. And it's on us to protect that. And the rules have changed, and we've got to adapt to it, whether I agree with it or not. That doesn't matter. You know, that'd be selfish of me to think that way. So if it's within the rules, we're going to find a way to protect this program. And I think secondly, it's doing a great thing for the players. It really is. Did I personally think a full scholarship to the University of Florida previously was enough? Yeah, because not only are you getting a full scholarship and you're getting your education paid for, you're getting your practice facilities taken care of every day. You know, Ian Poulter came here on his son Luke's visit, and he was blown away at what's provided for these guys. The dining hall we have and where our athletes eat every day, you guys, this building is ridiculous. It's the nicest building I've ever been in. And like, they are treated so well left, right, and center. So did I think that we should be paying players on top of that? Probably not. But now, you know, if you got the parents and the players on board and that money's going to the right thing, maybe it's going to pay for a player's summer schedule, or they're putting it in a savings account and it's going to go to pay for them when they turn pro. You guys both know it's really expensive to do that and to go to Q school and do those different things. It costs a lot of money. So maybe some of that NIL is going to go to that type of stuff. So I've come around on it big time, and we're happy to help our players where we can. And I think, you know, there's got to somehow be some common ground that's found here at some point, because I still think there's a lot of gray area when it comes to NIL, but it's in golf for sure. It's happening. We dealt with it a bunch last summer with some of the recruits that we've had. But I think it's turning out to be all positive, and we're gonna make the best of it and give our players the best opportunities that we possibly can on and off or in and out of our program. But I think the biggest thing for us is if you put it down on paper, I know Dudley and I can develop an 18-year-old junior golfer into a ready to turn pro 22-year-old man. And that's where I hope our players and future parents see the value in the University of Florida. Yes, we're going to try and provide you all this extra stuff, and that's great. But the core of it, you're going to get a great education from a top 5 public university, and you're going to get to come play for 2 coaches who love you, who push you, and know how to make you better and to develop the best that your talents can possibly be. And I think Ricky Castillo was the best example. He walked out last year, 4 years at the University of Florida, and his first Korn Ferry Tour event as a professional, he won. And that just doesn't happen. You don't lock into that. And he was ready for that through his development here and through Ricky's hard work. And I'm super proud of that. So hopefully the future players and recruits and their parents see the way that we're developing our players as men and as golfers. And that's going to be what the most valuable part is.
That's the one where he beat Teeter, right? Is that right, Coop?
I think so. Yeah.
It was, okay. We're rooting against him. No offense. We like
that's
Josh.
Okay. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are, and Ricky's the type of competitor that he probably likes when people are rooting against him and makes him even better.
Maybe so. We should say we're rooting for Josh to do better than him.
There you go. That's
we like Josh. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting to hear. So, from your perspective, I guess one is it sounds like. So again, the general theory behind NIL is, you know, schools are profiting. I mean, that's not the exact theory, but schools are profiting off players, and so they should get some sort of benefit from that. And what it sounds like here is, I mean, it's not like the golf program is necessarily profiting off players' revenue, like revenue. The school isn't necessarily doing that, but because of the history, et cetera, it's something the school needs to invest in all resources. And so it's a lot of the NIL program is in large part funded by former players and other people who are involved in the game who want to see Florida go on to success. Is that about right?
I think that's bang on.
Okay. And in general, like, if you don't, I mean, I don't know what the numbers look like, and I don't need anything exact, but just in general, like, what would you call like the average state out there dollar wise? What I heard from this D3 coach, it was another school in Florida, D1 school, that was recruiting this guy, and they offered the guy $20,000 to come over and play and a full ride, which I was like, okay, that sounds about what I would guess the market is, but I don't know if that sounds like what the market is probably, but I have no clue.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know. And that's probably the trickiest part that I was alluding to in my previous answer is is we're all like playing this game and we don't know what the rules are. And the market is obviously not public. We're not seeing these contracts or whatever's being signed. So I honestly don't know. We try and take as much from the players and their parents as we can, and you know, hear what they're doing and what other coaches are saying and doing. But that's the trickiest part about this game is that, you know, my dream jobs was being a general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Okay. So you're negotiating with Austin Matthews, who's one of the best players in the game right now. He just, unfortunately last night, didn't get his 70th goal, but he scored 69 this year in 82, which is pretty amazing. But so, you know, a GM's negotiating with Austin Matthews, you're negotiating with his agent. His agent says, okay, you're going to pay Austin $15 million over the 8-year term. Okay. But the Colorado Avalanche are offering them $17 million. So it's all transparent and out there. It's not like that for us. You know, we're not dealing with agents and stuff like that. So it makes it super tricky. You don't know what other schools are doing. And so I'm hoping there's going to be more transparency involved going forward so that everyone can kind of play by the same rules and know what we're up against. But I hate to give you that murky answer, but that's really where we're at right now.
That makes sense. Well, we'll hit our last question here. It's the same for everybody. And for you, it's going to be two parts. First part is, if you could go back to yourself as a junior golfer and tell yourself just one thing, what would that one thing be? And the second part is, if you could tell a junior golfer one thing, what would that one thing be?
For sure, with myself, I would go back and teach myself exactly what we're constantly teaching our guys every day now. And that's work as hard as you can between tournaments. Take those lessons from your last couple competitive events, apply them to your practice, work on those specific situations that you need to get better at. And then when the next tournament comes up, go play. Don't make it more important or less important than the one before or the one coming up. You just go play golf. And if you play great, awesome, you go home and get back to work. If you play really poorly, yeah, it's going to hurt, but you just go home and get back to work. And that depressurizes golf. And I was the worst at that. Every event I went into was like the Masters for me. And you can't play golf like that. You got to work hard at home and then go enjoy the competition. And I wish I would have enjoyed the competition a lot more than I did. And then I think the second thing, if I could talk to junior golfers now, they work so hard with their swing coaches or their short game coaches, but you can work on your mental game by yourself. And that's embracing the challenge of golf. This is a really, really complex and hard sport with a lot of moving parts. And if you can understand how difficult it is, I think you're so far ahead of the game, and have some grace with yourself. And if you have some grace, you can start to control your emotions a lot better and don't have these crazy expectations, because I constantly see junior golfers and even college golfers who let bad rounds spiral. And what should be a 72 or 73 turns into 76, 77, 78. And all of a sudden you can't beat the best players in the world when you're shooting those scores. You can do it when you shoot 72, 73, and you can always find a way to, if you're a good player, you can shoot that score by being patient, controlling your emotions, continuing to make good decisions. But when you let the emotions that are so amazing with this game, that's what we all love, is how great a birdie or a majestic four iron to a back pin feels. Like, that's the great stuff. But you got to understand the bad stuff's coming too. You're going to miss that 4-footer. You're going to miss that easy up and down. You're going to misjudge the wind. You're going to hit a bad drive. Those things are coming for the best players in the world. And when you can handle that and embrace the difficulty of the game, you got a chance to be great.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate it, Coach. Where can people find you, find Florida, follow your team, all that kind of stuff on social media or wherever is best?
Well, I'm embarrassed with my social media handle. It's Real JC Deacon. It was a stupid thing I did with my brother way back in the day, and I can't get rid of it now because I've had them both for so long. But and then we're at Gators Men's Golf, Gators M Golf on on Instagram, and it's a really fun page to follow. Just you get an inside look at what we're doing and how the guys prepare for tournaments and what tournament golf looks like, and obviously displaying a bunch of our highlights and stuff. But those are the main ones. And you know, we have such a great platform here at the University of Florida, and looking forward to getting back to work and seeing what we can accomplish here the next couple months.
Absolutely. Well, be sure to follow Coach and Florida Gators. And if you're listening to us right now, please make sure to like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. On Instagram, we are at the Tournament Code. On Twitter, we are Tournament Code. As always, we appreciate you joining us, and we look forward to diving in deeper to what it takes to play elite tournament golf.